Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation, the California Endowment. Health happens when California values schools more than prisons. Learn more at calendow.org. And the California Healthcare Foundation, rating hospitals, doctors, and long-term care. Smarter choices start at calqualitycare.org.
From Valley Public Radio in Fresno and Bakersfield, this is Valley Edition, FM 89's weekly news magazine program. I'm Joe Moore. On today's show, what's in store for the future of the Kern County Public Library System? Earlier this year, county supervisors began debating a number of ideas, everything from having a private company run the library branches to a possible new sales tax. We'll learn about the results of a new poll of Kern County residents on their thoughts on those issues. We'll also talk about the future of the Valley's software industry, which has been in the headlines lately with the big expansion underway at downtown Fresno's Bitwise Industries. But first, we turn our attention to an issue of poverty, the economy, the environment, and community planning in West Fresno. Southwest Fresno has had a long history battling those issues, poor planning, lack of investments, and poverty. But why is that? As FM 89's Diana Aguilera reports in the first of a two-part series of reports on this issue, a recently discovered set of maps sheds new light on Fresno's troubling and often overlooked history of segregation.
Mary Curry moved to West Fresno in 1956. Over the years, she's seen the neighborhood transform, but not in a good light.
There was a lot of businesses in the community when we moved here. There were grocery stores and there was retail, and we don't see any of that anymore. It's all gone.
It's now filled largely with low-income housing units and heavy industrial facilities. The transformation has left West Fresno at the top of the charts when it comes to poverty and overall poor quality of life. And according to the California EPA, the 93706 zip code is the community that's most vulnerable to environmental burdens in the state.
West Fresno is, I think, has been neglected for numerous years. We've been here since 1956, and I have not seen a lot of change as far as housing patterns and businesses. There isn't any. There used to be a vibrant downtown where people could go and shop. It's gone. So we've lost.
But how did this community get to where it is now? It all started in the early 1900s, when ethnic communities and affordable housing were primarily located in the southwest corner of town. At the time, federal government policies encouraged housing discrimination and segregation. Experts say the city which we live in today still reflects that legacy of discrimination, especially in West Fresno. Historian David Goldberg with UC Irvine says racial discrimination led to economic segregation and divided communities.
And those divisions are fields or parks or highways or, right? So you got to cross a highway to go, or you have to cross the park to get from a worse off area to a better off area.
In the 1930s, Congress created the Homeowners Loan Corporation. This gave low-interest, long-term loans to new homeowners across the nation, but not to everyone. To show which areas of the city were good investments, the government created residential safety maps. Neighborhoods were classified in four categories, from most to least desirable. The worst was red. That's why this practice has become known as redlining. Goldberg says the more racially diverse a neighborhood was, the lower it scored. That sent a strong message about investment in West Fresno.
Well, it's strongly to be discouraged, and certainly not loans should be given there. Or if loans were to be given, they should be at a much higher interest rate.
These color-coded maps quickly became adapted by other agencies and private banks. Across the country, many of the areas that were redlined 80 years ago still suffer a lack of investment. In Fresno, a number of neighborhoods were redlined, and the largest area was West Fresno. Former city manager Jim Aldridge grew up in this part of town. He says this area has always been the port of entry for newcomers.
If you're new to Fresno and you're low income, you're going to be looking in West Fresno, down here where the public housing stuff is.
Last week, I met up with him at Hinton Park next to Edison Computech School. We sat down on a bench looking over the redline maps from 1935. I asked him to read one of the descriptions of a Fresno neighborhood.
And there are a few colored families living in this area, but it appears there's little danger of infiltration of other colored races found in the large red area to the south. That makes sense.
Does it surprise you, the language they use?
Yes. Yes, it was very bold statements. It's hard for me to read crazy stuff.
Aldridge and others say these racist policies encouraged racial and economic segregation. As the city grew to the north and east, people of color and low-income residents, as well as heavy industrial facilities, became established in the corner of the city. With lack of investments and less opportunities for residents, those who could afford it relocated to different parts of town. Despite the passage of the Fair Housing Act of 1968, community leaders say housing discrimination based on race and class has made a big impact on what our communities look like today, with some neighborhoods thriving and others lacking basic resources. Tate Hill, president of the Black Chamber of Commerce, says even though redlining is a thing of the past, it still influences how people think of West Fresno.
Some of the sentiments and perceptions are still there, that West Fresno is not a desirable location for investment.
And how does someone change this perception? Hill says it starts with residents, community leaders, and city officials believing that this neighborhood can thrive. He points out the Kearney Palms Shopping Center, close to Highway 99 and Fresno Street. For more than two decades, residents fought for the opening of the first and only major grocery store in the area.
One of the concerns that a lot of individuals have from outside of the community, that they said it just wouldn't work. And when they completed the construction of this location, the Food for Less that was anchor tenant here, in the first couple of months became like the number one Food for Less in their whole chain.
Hill says the shopping center is a testament to the community's potential, proving that with the right investors and the right mindset, West Fresno can be a vibrant neighborhood once again. With Valley Public Radio News, I'm Diana Aguilera.
I'm Jeffrey Hess with Valley Public Radio, standing on Kearney Boulevard, which is the gateway to West Fresno. The shopping center here is a sample of the improvement city leaders envisioned with their new Southwest Fresno specific plan. That's the document being designed right now to help guide and foster new growth. The area has long been neglected by the city, and that is not a fact that's lost on the people who call it home, especially not the roughly two dozen people who attended a recent meeting with city planners about what they want to see improved.
They've been lied to so much, and they're tired of it.
They have seen that even though they get involved, they haven't seen a real change.
You would think after 73 years, something should change.
That's Jeannie Ramirez, Leoncio Vasquez, and Catherine Crozier, who are all residents of the neighborhood. Some, like Crozier, have lived here their whole lives and watched as revitalization effort after revitalization effort has come and gone, only to see other parts of the city thrive and grow.
It's not that I feel, I know that this city has not thought enough of West Fresno to keep it up like it and do improvements as they did for the other parts of the city.
But at the same time, all three expressed a completely different sentiment. Jeannie Ramirez says this time it might be different.
Y'all keep coming. We got to make a difference. We got to show that, because you know what, the children are our future. They're, you know, it's up to them. They're the ones we need to help them. We need to let them know what is the changes that we need for them. Because they're the ones that are going to be here taking over pretty soon.
The vision of transformation in their community is not hard for many residents to see. Sidewalks and streetlights, small and big box retail stores, safe and abundant park space, fewer blighted homes and more new single and multifamily units. Basically, they said what they can see just a few miles north. These small requests could clear the way for a new Southwest Fresno in just a few short years, says Fresno City Council President Oliver Baines, who represents the area.
So in Southwest Fresno for the last 40 years, you know, if you look behind me here, we're in my office, you see a whole bunch of plans, and none of those plans get implemented, and you wonder how that happened.
Baines is spearheading the effort to build a Southwest Fresno specific plan, which he says will finally, once and for all, lay the groundwork from which a new community can grow.
The difference with this process is we're going to codify this plan. So this plan will be fully adopted by the Fresno City Council, will become part of the overall planning of the city. It will come complete with an environmental impact report, which, as you know, is a great asset to developers and investors.
But making decades-long promises is a hard sell. as is finding the will to change city land use policy that has led to so much heavy industry setting up shop in the area, making it less desirable for residents with the means to move elsewhere. Community advocates like Leticia Corona with the Leadership Council for Justice and Accountability say if the city acts now, dramatic change is just around the corner.
We're working on issues that are basic. They're not asking for more than that, having the basics and the needs that should already be provided as a social service or already as part of as a public servant and an elected official should already be working on.
There's also the question of if the city will have the political will to follow through and spend the money to make improvements. Corona responds that Fresno doesn't have to go it alone. There are grants from the state that are specifically targeted at improving poor and minority communities. But even without that new infrastructure, local developers are already eyeing the area. Granville Homes owns roughly 400 acres in southwest Fresno. Jeff Roberts with Granville says there is economic growth opportunity, but to really jumpstart it, the city will need to do its part.
Like I said, we've invested very heavily in the area, not for today, but certainly for tomorrow. And so we're anxious to see a good mix of uses, a good balance between parks and schools and infrastructure.
Well-known local developer Terrence Frazier said in an email that he's also eyeing the area and has purchased significant land there. But Jeff Roberts is unsure that southwest Fresno will ever be the destination that north Fresno has become. He says the area has tended to grow within itself, with native residents staying, making prioritizing their needs paramount. Although advocates counter, it's the only option left for people of color and low-income residents that are in the majority in the neighborhood. City Councilmember Baines acknowledges that the challenges are large, but he believes that someday southwest Fresno could be much more desirable.
There's no doubt in my mind about that. Zero at all. I know for sure that, I am absolutely convinced that I'm going to come back in a few years and, you know, after I'm out of office and that I'm going to drive around my neighborhood and be very proud.
But even if the plan is drawn up and passed by the council, it's no guarantee that it'll be able to reverse the decades-long trend that made southwest Fresno what it is today. For Valley Public Radio News, I'm Jeffrey Hess.
And joining us now on the phone, Oliver Baines is with us on Valley Edition to talk a little more about this issue and how the city hopes to transform West Fresno. Councilmember Baines, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We just heard you talking with Jeffrey Hess about your hopes to drive around your neighborhood after you're out of office and see a transformed community. This is a big process. It's also a long-term process. Assuming that it's put into place, when do these changes start to actually happen in real life?
Well, I would assume when we're hoping immediately. So we believe that we should get this adopted in about a year and a half from now. And what we're looking for is for projects to already be tracking this process along and for them to be ready to go when we adopt a specific plan. And the findings from the specific plan with the environmental impact report and the level of analysis that will be done and implementation chapter will really allow businesses to have confidence about coming in, moving in, and investing in southwest Fresno. Along with the zoning changes, there will be certainty along their process for investors.
Now, this builds off of the new general plan, which you and the other members of the council adopted last year. But as we're talking with Oliver Baines today on Valley Public Radio, Fresno City Council member with us today, this also is an issue looking forward in terms of what the city is going to do. You're talking about zoning changes, but you have residents asking for things like sidewalks and streetlights, really basic infrastructure. How do you pay for something like that in an area that hasn't had that type of investment in a long time?
Well, the best way to, so here's realistically how it works. Funny enough, when you have specific plans, because the specific plans call for a level of investment, it underscores the type of investment and underscores the type of development that will come to a community. Then it's easier for the city to plan how to invest in infrastructure. So there's a kind of a relationship between investment, the private sector with building, and then also with infrastructure investment by the city. But for a very long time in southwest Fresno, what we haven't known is because the zoning really hasn't been what the community has desired, because there's been uncertainty from both the city side and the investor side about where certain types of investments are going to go, where you're going to build single-family housing, where you're going to have commercial and retail corridors, all of that having uncertainty. It was very difficult for the city, one, to plan infrastructure because they weren't sure what type of investment was going to come in, and two, it was difficult for investors to come in because the city was pausing. So you had this, you literally have a situation of who's going to go first, the chicken or the egg, and it was really difficult. So with a specific plan, we have the opportunity to have a plan, to have direction, and to have certainty about where the type of investment development is going to go.
One of the things that is an issue in this community is a lot of heavy industrial development. You have some things like the Darling Meat Rendering Plant that are decades old and in the process of legal issues and things like that. But there's continues to be interest by big companies to build industrial projects in West Fresno. But there's many residents who say, hold on a second, why do all these projects get put in our part of town? Why aren't they spread throughout the city? How does this plan, or how would this plan, address something like that? And do you think it's time to spread out the heavy industry throughout Fresno instead of putting it largely in your district?
Yes, sir, most definitely. I absolutely stand with the community in that sentiment. But here's the foundation for that feeling that we have in West Fresno. It isn't so much that we're saying, well, we don't ever want any industrial again. What we're saying is we want a balance of investment. So what happens is because there's only been the industrial type of investment with little to no retail, little to no quality housing, what happens is when you drive around Southwest Fresno, all you see is heavy industrial without the type of other investment that the residents desire. So what the residents are really saying is, no, we don't. Not that we don't ever want industrial investment again. It's just that let us have a balance of investment. We like to have single-family housing, quality single-family housing. We like to have quality retail and commercial. We like our community to, quite frankly, look like any other community in Fresno. And until that happens, we need to slow down on just approving all the industrial projects.
Is there a risk in terms of a plan like this that has really big goals? You want all this new development in terms of quality, single-family housing, these sorts of things, bringing in a mix of incomes into a neighborhood. Is there a risk that you push out people who are there right now? And how does a plan like this address something like gentrification? Because you have big developers. We heard from Jeff Roberts from Granville in that piece that just aired. We had a quote from Terrence Frazier saying he's interested in building things in this neighborhood if this plan goes forward. How do you protect the people who are there right now and have been there a long time at the same time as encouraging new dollars and new investment, new people to come into the neighborhood?
Right. So the way you do that is, in my opinion, hopefully the way that we're engaging this process and having the residents be intricately involved in the planning and the design and the goals. So we have, you know, we've had a couple of our community meetings. We've had, you know, over 100 people turn out each time. This is a resident-driven process. And our steering committee is made up mostly of residents and stakeholders, right? So these types of issues are being discussed at the ground level as the plan is being put together. So the good thing is that we're talking about that now. It's not an afterthought. It's a thought that is being incorporated throughout the document. So I think that we will be able to protect gentrification, but at the same time, we will bring a balance of quality investment to Southwest Fresno. Now, we've got to be really sensitive that while we don't want gentrification to occur, we certainly don't want the neighborhood to only be home to low-income individuals. We do want to be able to attract middle class and higher income families into Southwest Fresno. So there's this balance that you have to strike with that. Yeah, you certainly don't want to push out, you know, the existing residents, but you also do want to attract other residents, other higher income earners and middle class, you know, upper middle class families to West Fresno. So there will be a balance that we have to do as we approach the process.
In the last report that aired right before this interview, we heard from Tate Hill talking about the Kearney Palms Shopping Center and how for decades people said that wasn't going to work or investors weren't ready to step up and build something like that. And this is right at Fresno and 99 and the beginning of Kearney Boulevard. And he pointed out that as soon as that the store opened, as soon as that shopping center opened, the stores there immediately began performing really well. The Food Max, I think it is, was the number one selling store in the entire chain. Other stores are having success there. Is that a sign, do you think, of the future and the potential of this neighborhood? And maybe that it's been overlooked by traditional measures and traditional business philosophies, I guess you could say?
No, I certainly agree with Tate, and I'm glad that he pointed that out, and I believe that that chain still is the number one chain in the entire Western Hemisphere, that particular store, rather. And so what I always try to impart upon not only developers but retailers as well is that people that live in West Fresno, they need the very same thing that people in any other part of the community need. Their needs are the same. We like to buy milk and food and groceries. We need to buy baby diapers and Pampers and food. So these very basic needs don't change based on your income level. It really is part of just human nature. So what we try to say is we're not surprised that the Kearney Palms Shopping Center, even through the great recession we just had, stayed almost 100% full. There were little to no vacancies in there. And if you drive through there right now, you'll see, I don't think there's a single vacancy. And it's been like that since it's open. And that's because our residents have the very same needs and they actually spend money. Believe it or not, they have to spend money to live. And those types of businesses do well in our community. And Kearney Palms is evidence of that.
I know you're trying your best to have this be a bottom-up process to get input from local residents, but you're a resident of the district, as well as being a representative of the district. What are the things that you want to see in this plan? Let's put the wish list out there. What would you like to see happen in West Fresno with this new city approach to making sure that what's planned out there is actually, in fact, planned?
Right. What I would like to see is really my wishes are no different than any other resident that lives out there. We want safe neighborhoods. We want quality single family housing, and we want quality retail, and we want quality parks and green space. So those three or four things are really at a very basic sense what people want. And our needs in West Fresno are really no different than any other person's wish list living in Fresno. You know, safe streets, you know, quality housing, quality retail and business, and nice green space and parks. So I don't think that's too much to ask. We're not asking for anything more than any other resident desires in any other part of the city.
Before we go, one last question. You mentioned parks. There's been a lot of discussion in the community over the last 6 months or so about parks and the lack of equal park space in different parts of the city, the south part of the city not enjoying nearly as much parkland as the north side has, let alone the maintenance level of those facilities. Where do you fall on that issue and this push for more park space? Frankly, the city right now has a really difficult time maintaining the parks it has right now. Can the city of Fresno be in a position to provide more park space at the same time as paying to maintain all of it? Where do you fall on that with this issue of the Parks Master Plan and trying to bring more parks to the south part of the city?
Yeah, so I know that sometimes it appears as though an issue is being brought to the forefront, and it's all of a sudden being highlighted. But, I'm going to take this opportunity to say I've been talking about parks since I walked in the door from my first year in office and making investments in parks to keep parks open. So, and, if you listen to any budget hearing that I had, I've been talking about parks and green space, and especially in my district from the beginning. For me, I've always said that parks were – they're a public safety issue for me. I need quality parks and green space in my community for my young residents to go. I need people. I need young men and women out of the streets, out of the influence of gangs. So they need quality places to go. So I've actually viewed parks from the very beginning, you know, years ago, as a public safety issue. And I certainly appreciate, you know, now all of the attention that has been brought to parks. But I've been firmly in support of parks for a very long time. I believe, you remember Councilmember Quintero brought forth a motion for a parks master plan in our last budget. I think in the last couple of years, the city, as we've come out of our recession, we have made more investments in parks. So I certainly am a fighter for parks and always have been, and I'm glad that others are joining that fight and speaking loudly about it. And I think that we're heading in the right direction, no doubt about it. I mean, you look at the last couple of years, just with the city's budget, we've made very conscious efforts to reinvest in our parks. Now, the truth of the matter is, because you brought up maintaining parks, the truth of the matter is those are very, very difficult things to do. Building a new park and maintaining it right now is very tough for us. We don't have the mechanism in place, I believe, yet to do that. I believe we're still struggling to maintain and make beautiful the parks that we have. Sometimes when people draw differences between, say, a park in North Fresno or a park in Southwest Fresno or Southeast Fresno or Central Fresno, is very true. If you look, the quality of the parks look very different. The truth of the matter is a lot of those parks in Northeast and Northwest Fresno were maintained by community facilities districts. So the property owners there actually maintain those parks with an additional tax. So it's not coming from the general fund. It's not as though the city is only maintaining the parks in the north and allowing the parks in the south to not be maintained. The truth of the matter is, only because those areas have what are called CFDs, are those parks maintained at the level that they are. If they fell under the city's responsibility, quite frankly, and in all honesty, they would look very similar to the parks in some of the older parts of the city. And so what this really is about a conversation of how do you reinvest in your older parts of the city. So that is the conversation we're having. As we do our specific planning in Southwest Fresno, we certainly plan to have CFD so we can maintain parks properly. But at the same time, we're going to always, and we've always put pressure on the administration, and I've always put pressure on my colleagues to make sure that we are reinvesting and maintaining in our older parks, and we're doing that. So, like I said, I certainly welcome other voices to this conversation. I've kind of been here for a while, and we as we have moved out of the recession, you've seen us make larger and larger investments in parks. And this year, we now have our parks master plan. So I feel confident we're definitely moving in the right direction.
Fresno City Councilmember Oliver Baines represents District 3 on the council. District 3 is part of a new effort at developing what's called a specific plan to chart residents' needs for that part of the city, everything from streets, from sidewalks and streetlights to where heavy industry and housing will be developed in the future in that part of the city. Oliver, what's the timeline as far as people being involved? Are there still opportunities for people to voice their concerns?
Oh, sure. I mean, we're going to have a series of community meetings. The steering committee, as it were, is relatively set. The process is open to the public in almost any way possible. So there are opportunities for residents to come and participate and give their input. We certainly look forward to that.
All right. We wish all those residents the best. Oliver Baines from the Fresno City Council District 3, thank you so much for joining us today.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Stay with us on Valley Edition. When we come back, we'll talk about the future of the Kern County Public Library System. Should it be privatized? Should there be a new sales tax to help fund libraries? Or something else entirely? We'll get some insights into the opinions of Kern County residents from a new poll and find out how local individuals can get involved in voicing their concerns. That's all coming up in the next segment on Valley Edition. You're listening to Valley Edition. Earlier this year, the Kern County Board of Supervisors kicked off a big conversation about a big issue, the future of the Kern County Public Library System. For years, the library has struggled with budgets, having the money necessary to provide the services that residents expect. County supervisors said maybe it's time to look at bigger issues. What is the future for the system? Should it be privatized, essentially handed to a private company to operate? The hope was that a private company might be able to provide more services for less money. Other ideas were also floated, including a possibility of a new sales tax and questions about exactly what residents want out of a library system in the 21st century. Here to tell us more about the ongoing effort to address those issues is Andy Apple with the Kern County Public Library System. Andy, welcome.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you for joining us. This recent effort at looking at the future for the library system most recently culminated in a poll of county residents asking their opinions on things. We'll talk about that in a second, but before we do that, I want to ask you exactly what's happening right now. What is this current state of the library system? These discussions have been going on for some time, and a lot of it centers on the ability to provide quality service and improve services. Can you give us some examples of where we're at right now and maybe what people want to see in the future?
Absolutely. Right now we are holding community meetings around the county in every library community and a few of our bookmobile cities where our bookmobile stops. We have 24 physical library locations and 2 bookmobiles that go to the rural communities. So last night was our first meeting in Arvin with the residents. We had a fabulous turnout and a great discussion. It lasted about 2 hours, and I think it really set the tone of where we are headed and where we want to go and what the community wants to see from us.
So what are some of the things that you heard from residents last night?
You know, they discussed more opportunities for the teens and the youth, not only during the summer, but also throughout the year, volunteer opportunities for all ages, and mentoring, as well as bilingual services and or conversation circles or materials. Those were some of the things, some of the highlights that were brought out last night. It's really engaging to sit in a room full of residents that are passionate about their public libraries and to hear firsthand what it is that they would like to see and where we are headed. And we were right along with the county administrative office staff and library administrators, myself and my director, Nancy Kerr, and we had a room full of 60 people. So it was really good.
So one of the issues I know that people have talked about is the hours of some of the branches that are out there. Give us an idea of some of the concerns along that. You have some libraries that aren't open all the time, essentially.
Yeah, and that is definitely a concern of some of our, quite a few of our rural libraries are open, you know, 2 to 3 days a week, and it's every other day. And we have to do that for a reason. We have one person that's usually staffing 2 to 3 libraries, so we have to offset the days so that person can be at both branches. And they can't be at the same branch in the same day. So we really had to stratify and use our staff and our services the best that we can with the limited resources that we have.
Now, obviously, you work for the library. You aren't in a position of setting county policy, so I'm not going to ask you things along those lines. But this poll of county residents commissioned by the Board of Supervisors came out recently asking 600 county residents to gauge their overall support for the library system. Can you tell us what came out of that poll? What insights have been gained from that, perhaps?
Sure. It was pleasing to know that the majority of the residents have a favorable outlook and really want to see their libraries succeed and not only strive but thrive in the communities that they're in. So that was very heartwarming for library staff and administrators to receive that news that our community does care. They do want to see us do better than the current state that we are in, and perhaps there are other options that we haven't thought of, and hopefully these community meetings can help bring those to the table.
Yeah, and just looking through some of the data here, it says 52% of those surveyed say they support the possible privatization of some county services, but the same percentage actually opposes privatization when it comes to libraries. The poll also asked people if they would support a new 1/8-cent sales tax that would maintain and expand library services. The tax also generated 52% in support. Exactly how are the libraries funded right now in Kern County? Where is the funding?
We are strictly general fund. I think we are either the only or the last two in the state of California that are funded strictly through general fund money. We don't have any other revenue sources coming in, either a tax or other large funding situations. So that is one reason why some people in our community have decided to take on that effort of advocating for 1/8 of a sales tax, which I think in their estimations comes to between $20 and $40 a year for the average person.
And the other thing that's the big question that I hear, the existential question that gets asked in a lot of industries right now, just the way technology is changing, gets asked in our industry and newspapers and anything in media, is in this digital age, what is the future for a traditional institution like a public library? Is that a conversation that you're having with residents in these discussions? And, you know, what is a library going to look like, not only this year, but in the next 10, 20 years down the road?
Absolutely. We've library administrators, we've been talking about this for over a decade, but it was interesting listening to the community residents last night in Arvin speak to not everybody has access to the internet, not everybody has a device, not everybody can go onto a computer and read the newspapers or get an e-book or an e-audio book. And that message was sent very strongly last night, that they need their community libraries to be there in order to have the kids go there and do their homework after school on the computers, because a lot of times the schools are requiring that, and that we are that stopgap between the schools and the home.
So if people want to participate in these events that are coming up, I understand you're having one basically at every library in the county. How can they get more information?
Oh, kerncountylibrary.org. You can find all of the information listed there. Tonight we will be at the Rosamond Branch out in the desert, and Thursday night we'll be at Taft in South Kern.
We've been talking with Andy Apple. She is the Assistant Director of Public Services with the Kern County Library. The county is currently reaching out to the public to ask them what they want to see in the future of the library system, as the funding for the library has been called into question, whether the county should look at things like a new sales tax or possibly even privatizing library services. That discussion continues throughout the fall in those community meetings. Andy, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.
You're listening to Valley Edition. It was a gala celebration like downtown Fresno has not seen in years. It was this past weekend at a 100-year-old building that was constructed to house auto dealerships, Packard, Dodge Brothers, other cars that have long since gone by the wayside. The building has sat vacant for years, but now it's getting a new life through a different sort of technology. It's the new home of Bitwise Industries, and it's leading many people to ask, is the Valley's software industry in a new renaissance? Joining us now to talk more about that, both the opening of the new Bitwise South Stadium project and other issues regarding technology in the Valley, we have two guests joining us. Damon Thomas, who's a software developer affiliated with one of the companies that's at Bitwise, and also Jake Soberall, who's the brainchild behind all of this, or one of those, with Irma Olguin and others. Thanks to both of you for joining us today. Jake, has to be very exciting to see an idea that started years ago at the hashtag in the Tower District and then grew to Bitwise in the Mural District, about a 10,000 square foot building, now more than triple in size with your new facility.
That's right. I mean, we started in 1,800 square feet in the hashtag, and here we are opening up a 50,000 foot facility in downtown Fresno. It is really neat to see the realization of that dream, and really the most important part of it is twofold. All of the folks whose genius has made possible getting here, those folks that are operating technology companies, doing exciting things, and then what this means for the future of technology here in the Valley.
So for listeners who aren't familiar about Bitwise, let's hear the elevator pitch. You're a technology company, but you don't so much develop your own technology products as you're facilitating all of these other companies and students and others who come to you as really you're the hub. You're positioning yourself as a hub.
That's right. We began by trying to ask, well, what is separating Fresno from being a global technology center? And identified three missing pieces. Place. How do we create the sort of environments where a technology company would say, I want to be there above any other place. I want to be and grow in that space. Takes the form of physical spaces like the building at Bitwise South Stadium. The second is education. How do I learn the things I need to enter this industry, primarily computer programming and web development? And then third, execution. How do we make sure that people, both here in Fresno and outside of Fresno, begin thinking, I can get the custom software I need, everything from a website to an enterprise-level software right here in Fresno, so that that puts our local software developers to work on the sort of work they want to be doing. The belief being that if you provide those pieces to the local technology industry, you would begin to see the sort of growth that we've seen in places like Austin, Portland, and Silicon Valley. And we're now 2.5 years into that, enjoying some of that success.
Jake, you've talked about how there's 90 companies essentially associated with the new building in some way, shape, or form, housed there or sharing space there. We have one of the individuals who's involved in software development at your facility is Damon Thomas. Damon, tell us a little more about what you do and what your company does.
Thank you and good morning. We are a technology company that's had a relationship with Bitwise and Geekwise and Jake and Irma since the very beginning. We primarily develop technologies that allow companies and individuals to engage with specifically mobile users in a quick and effective and easy in a way that they can track that activity. I personally am also one of the educators for Geekwise Academy, which is a division of Bitwise, being one of the educators teaching people HTML and CSS web technology. So raising the crop of new individuals to become technologists in the Central Valley.
So from your perspective of somebody who's actually developing products, why is it so important to have this cluster together of different people who are all doing similar sorts of things? Because you could all be doing your own things throughout the city. Why is it so important to be together? And have you seen that sort of snowball?
It's definitely snowballed. For us, the introduction was 59 Days of Code. That was a web competition where we had to develop a product in 59 days. And that was our introduction to other developers and technologists in the area that we thought we were one of a few, the only ones in the Central Valley or city, and to come to one place to find out that we're not alone, that we can work with other developers to help us with issues that are pieces that we can't solve. They come to us, Bitwise Industries alone, when they are working to find developers to help with products to develop, they develop and source locally. Just having that as an initial launch pad, 59 Days of Code opened up the doors for all of that. We used to have an office on the northeast side of town, and it was a storefront, window facing, and it was just an office. Nothing exciting, nothing magical. We're just a group of developers, but moving into the Bitwise building, explosive for us and what we do and what we bring.
And Jake, I want to turn to you on that very note. You could have built this project anywhere. You could have built it out at River Park. I see big plots of land out there at Friant and Knees and all that area there that buildings are going up. You could have done something there. You could have gone to Madera. You could have gone to Clovis. Downtown, you have one project that continues, Bitwise Mural District. Mm-hmm. That's still busy and full. And now this new old building by the stadium on Van Ness Avenue. Why do you feel it's so important to be in that area? How does that help your business?
Yeah, so very much by design. There is the side of caring deeply about downtown and believing it's important to Fresno, but that doesn't drive the actual business need for being downtown. And it's born out of this industry specifically. If we look at our young people that are growing up and wanting to get into technology, and we're very familiar with the problem of technology, other industries, our best and brightest leaving. But in technology specifically, the places they're going to aren't terribly diverse from one another. They are Austin and Portland and south of Market in San Francisco and Chicago and New York. They're urban environments. They're gritty. They have they're rough around the edges. They're downtowns. There's a density of resources, a density of like-minded individuals, and it gives them the sort of professional experience that they're looking for. And so all we're doing with respect to the place is certainly with our own flavor and hopefully doing better than those that have come before us, but is recreating what exists in other cities and saying that we can meet that minimum viable product of a world-class technology space in downtown Fresno, and then looking at, well, how now can we exceed that and do better than those places?
It sounds like what both of you are talking about are sort of different sides of the same coin in terms of having that density, those connections, those interactions between different people. You were kind of isolated before where you were at, and now you're with all these other companies, Damon. So being together,
yes.
Does that foster new ideas and new competitiveness, maybe sharing ideas?
It's for us, the experience in being inside the Bitwise building, was it's like we are our own technology company. We're developing products. And there are a bunch of other technology companies inside the building, but it seems like we're part of one big family and one big company. The interactions, the lunches, the events, the things that we do together, the engagement when it comes to I'm teaching a class. I ask another developer who works for another company inside, Derek at Edit, say, hey, can you come up and speak to my students about this piece of technology that I'm not an expert in, but he's an expert in. It's that type of thing where it really does feel like we're a big company, but we're our own individual companies and spinning and having lots of wonderful, fun time together, PlayStation and all that good stuff.
Jake, tell us a little more about the building because people are going to drive by there. I've been driving by and seeing it, even if those people haven't taken a tour just yet. What's this all about? Give us the visual tour over radio.
Yeah, so if you've missed it before, you shouldn't any longer. There's a 25-foot by 15-foot billboard on top now that says Bitwise South Stadium there on Van Ness. It's a 50,000-square-foot building that was really deliberately picked. Big open floor plate. It used to be a car dealership, so the berths have to be big enough to get cars around in there. Gives us the ability immediately to create really neat, open, collaborative spaces. First of all, the site. We're a block off of the 41. So for our friends that are not yet warmed up to downtown, we are easily accessible right there from any place inside or outside of town. We're walking distance from Kern that has all of the lunch spots and the downtown club, which is just now reborn, and the convention center. You can walk to Chichance. You can walk to a number of different places. So we're expanding an existing pocket of revitalization. Now, once you get inside the building, we've tried to put together not just space for the technology companies, but an ecosystem that wants to keep them there for not just work, but that conversation that happens adjacent to work with another like-minded individual. So in the building, we have four shared conference rooms, each themed off of a classic video game. So we've got Donkey Kong, Halo, Zelda, SimCity, really fun local artwork that then immediately engages you and starts a conversation. And it's really meant to cater to our geek population. And then supportive amenities. We have a UPS store in the building providing printing, scanning, copying, shipping, that sort of thing. Two food vendors. We have Cafe Corazon opening a second location there in the tower now that will be in the building on the first floor, both open to the general public and to the folks in the building. Mabel's moving down from Kern to join us. As you make your way back in the building, there's going to be a lab space for rapid prototyping and robotics, open with state-of-the-art equipment, open to all of the various robotics teams at our scholastic level, high school mostly, here in Fresno County. If you take a left turn there at the end of the hallway, I'm visually walking you through here, there is a what used to be a car ramp, 120 feet long car ramp that is a commercial leasing problem, right? Nobody's renting slopes these days. So Irma, came up with the idea, well, that ought to be a 200-seat stadium seating theater. And so for pitches and conferences and all of these sorts of things, now we have a venue for that, both for the folks inside the building and the community at large. Saturday night, we had the really good fortune of naming that the John W. Dotson Theater. So that'd be great fun.
Yes, yes.
In the basement, we have gym, so Accelerate Fitness out of Reedley, Dynuma, Selma has opened a new location, open to the general public and to the folks of the building 24 hours a day for a standard monthly membership. We have a lounge with video games and pool and all of the rest meant to be a spot for engagement. And then Geekwise Academy there in the building expands to 9,000 feet. And then I guess the last kind of big seminal element there is the hashtag from the tower moves down to the second floor of Bitwise South Stadium, more than doubles in size, opening up our capacity, and continues to offer its memberships at the same low rate of $39 a month.
Sounds like quite a project. $7 million, is that about the ballpark? I've seen that number quoted out there.
That's right. It's right in that ballpark. And, you know, for us, you get lost in that sometimes. But the interesting thing on the financials is it makes commercial sense to do this project. This is not charity. This is not a nonprofit. It's not a government entity. It makes commercial sense to do this deal downtown. And I'm really excited to share that because too often we think of downtown in a different way.
Antoine, Damon, tell me, in terms of moving into this building, you aren't in there yet. How excited are you about how this might change your work?
Extremely, extremely excited because we're currently inside the Bitwise Mural District building. So we're officed in the current Bitwise building. So it's just a move to a much larger space with a lot more amenities. I mean, the project is Quick Labs. We are very, very thankful, and I'm very thankful that Irma and Jake gave us the opportunity. They're put on 59 Days of Code, opened up the building, said, we want you guys in here. I mean, to the point where it's taking some of those developers and moving them downtown. So its impact in the building and all the excitement that it brings for us, the ribbon-cutting events, the clients that we're able to bring in, the classes that we're able to teach, all of that is just huge. And to the point where it's positioning myself to become a downtown resident as well. That's amazing.
We've had Jake on the program before talking about his vision for technology in the Valley and how this can grow and tens of thousands of employees working in this business. I want to ask you, as a different voice in this conversation, what do you see in the future? Do you see the current model growing in size and having a lot of these small individuals or small companies all working together? Or do you see this growing to the point maybe we have some larger technology companies all growing together? What's your vision for, let's say, 3 to 5 years from now?
My vision is exactly the same as Jake's and Irma's. The larger and smaller companies are already there. So all we're talking about is bringing in more. I see our business expanding. I see a lot of the smaller companies expanding. We moved in November of last year. A year later, we're already expanding. So in 3 to 5 years, I can just see many, many more companies locally and globally joining the Bitwise family and just wanting to have a piece of that pie.
Now, Jake, I asked your business partner, Irma, about this about 2 weeks ago, and she said, we have a problem. We're already out of space with the new building and the current one. Where do you go from here? How do you follow this up?
Well, I think we do more of the same and then some new exciting things. So we intentionally picked the spot there at South Stadium because there was opportunity for contiguous growth. Our intention is to create a campus and develop over 1 million square feet in the next 5 years, all for technology space and then supportive things like the restaurants, gyms, bars, coffee shops, those sorts of things. And that now creates a really interesting problem. We've got, if we develop 1 million square feet, we're talking about roughly a quarter of 1 million people now, tech workers coming to downtown Fresno. Folks are very fond of saying we don't have enough parking. So we've got to find a solution for that. For our part, we very sincerely want to develop a light rail system that gets folks from key areas of Fresno to downtown. And it's very easy to chalk that off as, hey, that's a government thing. But the truth of the matter is, if we look back through Fresno's history, just that has happened. Henry Huntington built that to get up to Huntington Lake, workers back and forth, a private railroad. And we intend to do just that here in Fresno to get those folks around and really make possible the sort of scale of technology growth that we're talking about in downtown Fresno. And based on what we've seen so far, that and more is really quite possible here.
We'll certainly be watching it again, Bitwise. When does the building actually open? You had your big grand opening gala, but I understand there's still some work being done.
Yes. we'll begin moving tenants in November. And with all of the settling and finalizing of construction, you're looking at probably it being at full speed sometime in mid-December, early January.
Very exciting. Jake Soberall with Bitwise Industry and Damon Thomas with GeekWise, and a software developer in his own right, teaches at the Bitwise facility there. And if people want more information, Jake, how can they get a hold of you? What's your website?
So bitwiseindustries.com.
All right. Thank you both for joining us so much today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all for today's Valley Edition. As always, we'd like to know what you think. Send us an email, talk@kvpr.org, or tweet us. We are @KVPR and @Valley Edition. And for Valley Edition producer and reporter Ezra David Romero, audio engineer Marv Allen, production and operations manager Don Weaver, and reporters Jeffrey Hess and Deanna Aguilera, I'm Joe Moore. This is Valley Edition on Valley Public Radio.
Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation, the California Endowment. Health happens when California values schools more than prisons. Learn more at calendow.org. And the California Healthcare Foundation, rating hospitals, doctors, and long-term care. Smarter choices start at calqualitycare.org.